everyone, and welcome to our Ag Pro podcast here on Farm Journal Radio. I'm your host, Ashley Davenport, and with me today is Mr. Steve Patterson. Steve is the Senior Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Southern States Co-op. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Ashley. How are you?
I'm good. So, Steve, Southern States has a lot of different locations. Where are you based out of?
I'm based out of Richmond, Virginia. Our headquarters is based here in Richmond and has since the 1923. We're almost 100 years old, which is hard to believe.
That's exciting. Do you have any plans, or is it still too early? You're about 5 or so years out from that big centennial celebration.
Yeah, it's a little too early, but we're already starting to talk about it. But we're more focused on, you know, doing what we need to do day to day to deliver the value we need to our farmer members and our customers. So 5 years goes quickly, as you know.
Oh, it does. It flies by. Time flies when you're having fun, and it is so true. So, Steve, can you talk a little bit about the different products, services that Southern States has to offer?
Oh, absolutely. So we offer a whole lot of different things, but primarily we have three businesses. One is our agronomy business, which is, you know, runs around $600 to $700 million in business, and in, you know, we move around over 1 million tons of fertilizer, plant food, and we also have an energy business. Most people don't know this, Ashley, or realize this, but Southern States is the 10th largest propane company in America.
Wow.
Yeah, over the years, we've extended our brand, if you will, into the energy space, and it's done really well because once you have a brand, and that brand involves trust, good service, and all those type of things, you can extend into another category like energy pretty well. We've been very successful in the energy business. And then we have what we call our farm supply business, and this is a business that, you know, obviously farm supplies are things that farmers need, but we also have a lot of dealers out there, independent dealers that purchase farm supplies from us, and that ranges from bag feed to certain elements of clothing to gates, fencing, animal health, lawn and garden, all those type of categories as well. So you wrap all that together. We have about 115 company-owned locations. We have 70 member cooperatives, and we have 1,600 independent dealers out there up and down the East Coast. So you roll all that together, it's well over $1 billion, about $1.5 billion of total volume for Southern States.
Okay. So I'd like to go back and touch on that agronomy part of it. So what,
sure.
And I know that you cover such a large area, but where you're at in Richmond, how has the growing season been? How was the season for you guys?
It's been a strange season for us over here on the East Coast. You know, we had a lot of wet weather in the spring. We had a lot of wet weather in the summer, and we've had a lot of wet weather until this week. So that brings all kinds of problems with it. From planting back in the spring, planting was a challenge, and then throughout the year, we had weed escapes. We had obviously fungi thrive on wet conditions, insects. So it's been an interesting year. And as harvest has begun over here on the East Coast and has been going on for a little while, yields on corn are below normal. And several of the fields never got their second application of nitrogen because it's simply too wet. There was a lot of issues growing our core crops. So, you know, I would have to say the yields overall, depends on where you are, of course, but overall are a little bit disappointing for the East Coast producer. And again, that depends on where you are, but big picture, they're a little bit lower than normal. And in these times of lower prices, yield is everything. Maximum economic yield is everything. So a little bit disappointing there, as opposed to we operate in Kentucky, it's almost exactly the opposite. They've had a very good year out there overall. Corn yields are 180 to 250 bushels. Soybean yields are really good overall. And so it's kind of a tale of two areas.
So last month, Hurricane Florence rolled through. A lot of the news was focused on North Carolina and North Carolina producers. What was that impact in Virginia for your growers?
North and South Carolina are big territories for us. So once a hurricane starts forming in the Atlantic, you know, we watch it every day and we try to track where it's going. And as it hit eastern North Carolina and eastern South Carolina, that's a lot of our row crop area. And there's enormous amount of cotton, corn, soybeans, peanuts, sweet potatoes. There's a lot of crops grown on that east, eastern North and South Carolina area. And they were hammered by excessive flooding and rains. And fortunately, our facilities in those areas suffered very little damage, but our farmers suffered quite a bit of damage with crop losses. And that's why, you know, you hear about crop insurance. And when you look at the farm bill and you look at all these things, one of the most important things that needs to be preserved is crop insurance. And this is exactly why. These guys had no control over that hurricane coming in, and it's very important that they have some type of safety net that crop insurance offers.
Absolutely, absolutely. So typically, do you guys get a lot of rain, or does it just varies from season to season? Because I know when things get wet, you get fungi. Was that something you were anticipating this year?
That's a great question. And so if you look at one thing that's happened in the industry, and I'm sure people listening understand this as well, is we've been trying to promote using fungicides proactively. And the idea is you're protecting the crop as a preventive from these diseases. And a lot of farmers have adopted that. Others are like, you know, it's another expense. I'm going to take my gamble this year. And so it's hard to answer that question, Ashley, because we've had years where it's so dry over here on the East Coast that you can't grow a corn crop. But I will say, after being in this business a long time, that I think wet weather is more of the norm, and the storms that we have now seem to be so much larger than they used to be. And I'm not talking just about the hurricane, but even this hurricane, though, used to, they would come barreling in, and they, once they hit land, they broke apart, and they would move on. This one hit land and basically stopped, and there were like 33 inches of rain in some areas of southeastern North Carolina, which is basically unheard of. It's sort of like Houston last year; they got 55 inches of rain. But to answer your original question, it's not. It's not normal to have that much moisture that we've had this year.
Okay. So what do you guys do to kind of combat some of these problems? Do you use, or how do you use precision ag tech and other tools to combat these issues?
That's a great question. And so we've always been, our value proposition to the farmers is really three words. It's profitable growing solutions. So when you look at our sales force that goes up and down the farm lanes every day, they want to be a preferred partner with our growers. And to do that, you have to earn it. And you earn it by being knowledgeable and by making the right recommendations, and sometimes by not making a recommendation. So what I mean by that is if they're below the threshold level on a certain weed species or an insect species, the best thing you can do is advise the farmer not to spray. And there are, you know, farmers trust you over time when you're straight up and say, you know, in this situation, I would not spray at this time, or you're over the threshold level and you really do need to spray. So you build that trust over time. So we have a good sales force out there that know the soils, they know the farmers' practices, they know the weed species, the insects, the diseases, and we put a lot into that training year in and year out so people can add that value up and down the farm lanes. Many of those are certified crop advisors, but I've always argued the farmer doesn't really care so much about that. They do care, though, that you know what you're talking about and you can bring them value. So When you have sales force that's up and down farm lanes every day, they're pretty much on top of the situation, whether it's too much rain, too little rain, this disease, that insect pressure, whatever, and they can offer the solutions that help the grower at that point in time.
And that trust is such a big part of your business, but business in general. If you don't have that built up with your farmer, then you're behind.
You know, that's a great point, Ashley, and it's also true if you're dealing with an independent dealer. For example, Ashley's Farm Supply, you may have a store, you know, in North Carolina or in Maryland, Delaware, whatever, and you depend on Southern States to be a wholesaler, and we also have a salesperson that's their point of contact, and you have to build trust the exact same way. Trust, integrity, these things trump so many other things. So it's important to have, we are in a relationship business, and it's always been that way. And I, even with high technology, I believe it will always remain that way. Now, you mentioned precision agriculture a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
We are very engaged with precision agriculture. We were one of the first on the East Coast to really engage in it, which is now 20 years ago, 22 years ago, actually. We started it in about 95. And we have anywhere from 1.5 to 2 million acres across the Mid-Atlantic that's engaged in some aspect of precision agriculture. So,
wow.
And what we've always positioned it as is simply another tool to help the farmer be more effective. So we don't get real flashy with it. We just say this is another set of tools in the toolbox to help you increase your maximum economic yield.
Okay, that's I still can't wrap my head around that. 1.5 to 2 million acres out on the East Coast.
Yeah, and that includes Kentucky, and you could argue if that's East Coast or not. But, you know, the Maryland, Delaware, North, South Carolina, all through there, and Kentucky, all those added together, it adds up to, it's again, some way, shape, or form. Some of them are just using grid sampling. Some of those are variable applying lime. There's all kinds of different aspects to it.
Okay. It's hard to believe that we're already in the first couple days of October right now. This year, at least for me, has flown by.
I agree.
So looking ahead to 2019, what can farmers do, think about agronomically to plan for the year ahead?
Well, the number one thing they do, this is pretty basic, is they need to be soil testing, which we do an enormous amount of soil testing. And that goes back as far as we can remember. I mean, that's just a basic standard. But not everybody does it. They need to be doing that. And in these times of low commodity prices, we believe you can still make money as a producer. There's no question about it. However, you can't be sloppy with your practices. You've got to pay more attention to your planting rates. Is your planter calibrated regardless of what crop you're planting? Are you paying attention to how to increase your maximum economic yields? Are you looking at ways to improve your production and getting returns on any input that you put out there? Are you relying on your salesperson or anybody in the industry that can help you make these tough decisions? And I often say, Ashley, growing things is complicated. And when you look at weed science, plant pathology, entomology, soil science, economics, finance, government, weather, precision agriculture, technology, you roll all that together. The salesperson in today's world has to be a beast. And what I mean by that, that's an enormous responsibility, and you have to be knowledgeable. And a farmer trying to keep up with it themselves, it's very difficult as well. So it's as important as ever to have good partnerships with sales folks and with companies, your cooperative, your whoever you deal with. And I think it's time to get your pencil out and really look at every single cultural practice that you do to find ways to improve those yields and make sure you can still make money during these times. And we believe you can, but you can't if you're just doing the same thing that you've always done.
And you make a great point, Steve. You can't. A lot of people on the outside of ag might think, okay, all a farmer does is put that seed in the ground and pray for rain, pray for the right conditions for that plant to that seed to grow, and then harvest. But there's so much more that goes into it.
And, you know, Ashley, there's so much more. And that's one thing that attracted me to agronomy in the first place years ago, which was, I mean, you name it, and you have it. If you like science, it's there. If you like business, if you like economics, if you like weather, if you like technology, particularly in today's world, it's all rolled into agriculture.
Yep.
And it's always challenging. So you always have to be learning. You got to keep learning and keep your saw sharp. If you've ever read the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, one of the habits was keep your saw sharp. And to do that, you have to continuously be studying, reading articles, staying up in the industry, looking at the latest trends, latest products. You know, all those things rolled together is just so necessary in today's world to be effective.
Absolutely. Steve, I've got one more question for you. What is it that you think could play on the agronomy side of things, play a role in the next year, next 2 years, next 5 years? If you can look into your crystal ball and say, this could be a big factor, what would that be?
Well, I think that, you know, this one might not answer your question, but one of the biggest things that needs to happen is to settle the trade talks. And I think most people would agree that challenging other countries on their tariffs is the right thing to do, because it hasn't been done in years. So we all are feeling the effects of the trade talks. A uplift in commodity prices is going to help a whole lot of things. Now, without that, though, I think advances in technology are some of the biggest things. We all understand what happened when Roundup Ready came along. And now with the dicamba situation and with Extendamax and Ingenia, these type of things, there's new technology coming out all the time that can be game changers. I look back, and I know some of the game changers was obviously Roundup Ready technology was a game changer. Precision agriculture was a game changer in our industry. There will be other game changers. You just don't know. It's harder to see around the corner now and know what those are. But I believe technology, whether it's with biotechnology, information technology, equipment technology, these could be game changers that allow farmers to plant better, to plant smarter, to feed the crop more intelligently, to harvest more effectively. All those things together, I think what's going to lift everybody up is staying attuned to the new technologies that are coming at us so quickly.
And it's so cool. There are colleges out there. I'm a Boilermaker, and I know that Purdue is in the process of developing their, and they might have done it this year. I'm not quite sure. But a program or a major for kids on the ag side and on the technology side to form one comprehensive degree to cover both the ag side and the technology side, because there are companies, my brother was telling me about this, I believe it was IBM, and they're wanting to tap into the ag tech realm. And that's one way that they're wanting to do it is by having these schools create these degrees, these programs to cater for what they're trying to do. So it's just a fascinating thing to be thinking about.
It really is. And one of the biggest challenges is if you look at all the disparate technologies out there, whether it's variable rate planters, a lot of people don't know how to make them work. And there's nobody that I know of that can pull it all together and says, this will talk to that, this will talk to this. This is how we make it all work to where it's easy and effective. And so I think it's wisdom. What you just said was wise of some universities to pull that together because, you know, you look at Google and FBN, Farmers Business Network. You know, they're talking about using technology to perhaps be a game changer with farmers and data analytics. So you can supply these farmers for, I think it's $600 a year, with all this information to help them make better decisions. And ultimately, they would like to bring e-commerce to the farm. And I think that's going to happen slowly. And the reason I say slowly is because I still believe that the farmer likes dealing with salespeople and their dealer face-to-face and eyeball-to-eyeball. And so there'll be a certain percentage that starts purchasing maybe crop chemicals or different things over the web. But technology in general is not going to slow down. If anything, it's going to speed up. And it can be very confusing for a lot of people. So I think that's wise of Purdue and other universities to be looking at creating that solution for the marketplace.
Absolutely, absolutely. Steve, this has been an absolutely wonderful conversation to have with you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Ashley, anytime. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
I've been talking with Steve Patterson. He is the Senior Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Southern States Co-op. I'm Ashley Davenport, your host for the AgPro podcast here on Farm Journal Radio.